Welcome to the Round 19 Supercoach Coach Podcast. I'm Marcus, and this week I'm joined by FB Donkey. Welcome back, mate.
Jump up. Let's get crazy.
Yep. I know you're at least in good spirits. Bombers have had a brilliant month of football, so be keen to hear how your Supercoach team is tracking as well, mate. How have you been going?
I look a little bit better. Still pretty shitful, to be honest. Sitting around 13,000th, so I had a good week a few weeks ago, and then... Yeah, decent week on the weekend where I scored 23.97, but even that was like a decent week for me is like just okay. I know I beat you this week, but didn't beat a lot of other people. Look, things are going okay, I guess. My bench is pretty good. It's just my on-field players have been struggling. It was good to see Jeremy Cameron finally do something, mate. It's been pretty painful owning him. Unfortunately, I have Harris Andrews at the other end who has been just as bad and now is suspended for a week.
So no more key position ever?
No, I don't think so, because those two, like, they just looked like super value, looked like prime to just go on a sick run. Andrews was coming off two back-to-back decent hundreds and hasn't got anywhere near that since. And Cameron's role, like, seemed to significantly change after we picked him up, and GWS have just completely sucked ever since we brought him in. So, yeah, it's been a pretty tough ride with those two, but, yeah, everything else is going all right. No Dunkley, it's been a bit painful, but just going the Gorn Grundy seems to be working pretty well.
Yeah, I stuffed up last week. Went in on Dangerfield as my captain to mitigate any bad feels I have about my Supercoach team. I've just overloaded on Geelong as a strategy of bringing me some comfort across the Supercoach weekend. That hasn't worked so well last week, although the week before was pretty good.
Okay.
So I've introduced Duncan and Stuart to my side.
Why are you really loading up?
Yeah. which I'll take. Duncan scored 123 on the weekend, so that's not too bad. I scored 23.76 for the week, so a bit under you, but I think if I had got a better captain, either Gorn or Grundy, I would have hit the 2,400 mark, so I can't complain too much about the overall state of my team because I think comparatively I probably sort of gave up 50 points there by taking a risk on the Danger Man. No trades, so I held Fife. Four trades left with five rounds to go, so in a pretty good situation. Yeah, trade-wise. How about you, Mark?
Down to two, mate. And so I just got to carry Andrews this week. Two with Jaden Short on my field.
Are you in the situation where you've got any rookies left on field, Mark, or you're good on that front at least?
There's some pretty crappy premiums, actual rookies, I guess, left on field. Although with injuries and stuff every week, like I think I've played in. I've always had at least one or two of them out there.
Yeah. So we've got a few listeners, I think, that are still facing potentially a Logan. We'll answer some questions in relation to whether or not to finish that final upgrade or to hold on in case of injuries this late into the season. But before we do, as we do each week, we will just do a quick update on our Supercoach Coach groups. Our public group is being led by Michael's team still. His team, Break a Leg, has moved into 15th overall, so we continue to nice track work. Michael, yeah, with good interest. And in our Patreon group, our top scorer for the week was Michael's team, the Bridesmaids FC, scoring 25.81. So huge Jesus. Round. Still doesn't unseat Aiden's team, Stargazing Goats, who's our current front runner for the highest score for the year so far with a 26.82. In terms of the overall leader for the Patreon group, we have a bit of an interesting development. Matthew's the best 22. We've been following for a while at the top of that leaderboard. He dropped from 53rd to 93rd, which opens up Seb's team, Geordie Demolition, at 108th to potentially pip him. And just a reminder, that's for our $250 Patreon cash group. Very interesting finish there, yeah.
Can I just do a shout out for Jibba, one of our veterans? He scored 25.57 on the weekend, which was good for 89th for the week, and he has jumped up to 58th overall. So crushing it. And our mate Happy Raccoon is in like 230th again after finishing top 500 like four years in a row. He's starting to actually piss me off. He's that good.
Yeah, Mr. Raccoon. Maybe we should get him on for a few shows here and there, I reckon. All right, Mark, let's jump into some questions. And we'll start off with a bit of trade strategy. This first question is from Michael Caddy, one of our patrons. Trade retention versus having a full premium team. So he's got four trades left, and he's currently pivoting Logan Answorth in his D6. Okay. If both are picked again for the week, he's actually thinking about continuing with that pattern and not finishing his final defensive upgrade.
Yep.
And keeping the four trades left. So the question, I suppose, is with only five rounds to go to benefit from an upgrade, is he still better off upgrading to that premium? Keeping in mind that with the cash he's got available, he can only look to about a 500K defender by double trading.
I think it depends on what your goals are. I think if your goal is overall, then I think you just got to use the trades and get the premium onto the field and do it as soon as possible, because you're losing points by leaving that money and those trades in the bank. I think if you're aiming for leagues, I'd probably just wait a week. And depending on where you're sitting, if you're sitting sort of 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, or fighting for a top 4 spot, you might go a little bit harder. But yeah, just waiting a week, seeing what needs to happen next week, and then probably upgrading that spot leading into the Supercoach finals.
Yeah, I think we've been talking about the two rounds per trade rule in the lead up to the end of the season. And so after this week's trades, there'll be four opportunities to trade again until the remainder of the season. So having two trades left for the last four rounds is about as tight as you'd want to cut it, potentially a little bit too tight. But I actually agree with you there as well, Mark. If you're going for the overall, then you'd want to make that upgrade first. But perhaps maybe the only suggestion I might make, so Answorth is playing Saturday 145. If you can loophole him as an emergency, and if he scores, let's say, 80+, would you consider not trading in that case, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely something to consider. Interestingly, he looked awesome on the weekend from what I saw from the game, but he's also had a few 30s in his score in the last 6 weeks. So could get anything from Answorth, and I don't think you can rely on him to be an on-field player, even though with Andrews out, I will be relying on that this week. I think that the other side of that coin is that you need to really watch your benches, because I've seen some really terrible benches out there.
And hey!
Have you still got Hinge?
Yep. Oh my God, my bench is so bad.
I saw that he's out for like 5 or 6 on the injury list today. I haven't heard of him since he was dropped. But
Gardner too, mate. Whoop, whoop.
Okay, so the back line's a little bit light.
Don't worry, I've pivoted Chris Burgess, who's just got back into the team, into my back line. So
yeah, 56 on the weekend, not bad.
Spreading those donuts.
My bench is probably a little bit stronger. I've got cover on every line. I got three midfielders playing, so I've probably afford to go a little bit lower with trades.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think if you've got a really, really light bench, as I do, I probably want to stick with 3+ and give yourself that one extra buffer in case of a short-term injury that you can't cover. All right, next question is from Matthew Allen, another patron. He's been crushed by injuries the last few weeks, and he's only facing one trade remaining, which is intimidating prospect. He's got Cornelio as well, who's pretty much out for the remainder of the home and away season, but Dylan Clark's providing cover for now, and he's got Bewley as well, who did cover 5 this week. He doesn't have
plenty of cover.
Yeah, he doesn't have bench cover in the back line. He doesn't have bench cover in the rucks, and only Chol up forward. He's playing for rank, so he's asking when he should pull the trigger on Cornelio. And I think this is one of those rare scenarios, and we briefly referenced it last week, where you're actually happy and you've made the right decision, I think, Matthew, by not trading. You want to trade to cover a donut. If you even have Clark on field and you have one trade left, even though Cornelio is basically done for the rest of the season, you'd still probably just keep holding the trade until almost the last round.
Yeah, I would actually only trade for if I was staring at a multi-week donut. I think with one trade and no cover or very limited cover on a couple of lines, I'd be tempted to just wait until I've got, at this stage with 5 weeks to go, wait until I'm looking at a couple of donuts, not even just that first one. I think just covering one could actually get you in a little bit of trouble. So yeah, donuts only. Holding Cornelio is definitely the right thing to do. I've been in that situation before. It sucks, but you just got to do it, I think.
All right, next to some questions about injured players, and this first one is from Paul Dimich on Facebook. Does Nat Fyfe need to be traded? So for those that kept Fyfe, I think I had seen a little snippet somewhere that coming out of the hospital, he seemed reasonably positive about getting back for this week. I haven't followed up too much since then. Do you have any hot news, Mark? Will we need to worry about Fyfe this week, do you know?
Yeah, I was out at Subi training today. Just checked out Fyfe. He looked all right. No, I actually wasn't. He is listed as a test for this week, which I think is a good sign, and it's hard to trade someone listed as a test. Again, depending on your goals for the year, if you're really going for leagues and you have to win this week, then you'd be more tempted to trade, and if not, you can wait to finals the following week. I imagine that if he doesn't play this week, he'll probably play the week after.
Yep. Agree with that. I think if you've already held on for the one, you probably would be in a good spot to hold for at least another, even if he misses one more week. But if we get some more news that it might be a longer-term thing, then that's when you might pivot. If the news changes, Mark, so that it's another 2 weeks out, does that change things? Is there a limit at which you'd say, all right, now it's time to go, that we got more information?
Totally dependent on bench and cover situations. For me, my willingness to trade next week is going to be much, much higher than it is this week, just coming into finals.
All right, next question from Kieran Atkin from Facebook, and we're moving off Nat Fyfe now and on to Shannon Hearn. It was a late withdrawal last week, much to the chagrin of many people who traded.
Including Dunny.
Yes, I think Faz did similar too with Hearn. So, or maybe you got unlucky with just missing out on Hearn, but yeah, a few people out there. I think I saw some news that he did the injury the day before the game or something like that, and that they are hopeful that he comes back this week. But it's a calf tweak, which I don't really know exactly what that means. Calf strains are generally 3-4 plus. I think on our Facebook page, somebody mentioned that there were an Adelaide supporter, and Tom Lynch's calf strain has now lasted for 6 weeks. So I'm a little bit concerned about this one because calf and short term normally doesn't really go hand in hand. So how mild is this tweak, I wonder?
Yeah, interesting, because Josh Kelly, I noticed today, is expected to miss a couple more, which is probably going to did you keep him?
No, I didn't.
No. So I think that's going to really infuriate those that did, because that'll be a solid 4 weeks out, which is probably, I think if they knew that in advance, they probably would have traded. While I was in Perth today, I just knocked on Shannon Hearn's door. He did have a little bit of a limp, and I think that calf tightness, he's a bit of an old man now in his 30s. I doubt that they would risk him this week. He's listed as a test as well, but I do doubt that they'll play him this week. So that's unfortunate for those that brought him in. My beautiful wife brought him in, I think, 2 weeks ago. He played one game and then missed on the weekend, was a laid out on Sunday, and she copped a big fat donut, so she was not happy.
Yeah, no, it's not been a good situation for new Hearn owners, especially because he came back from the injury and was slightly cheaper. I think it was like 5-10, so definitely tempted a few in. Now, based on what we've talked through with Hearn so far, I'm not expecting him to miss, you know, 3-4 weeks right off the bat. So I'm taking it at face value that hopefully, even if he misses this week, that he's a decent shot for next week, if he's even in calculations this week. Is that being too naive on the matter, or is that how you're reading it too?
Yes, I do believe that calf tightness is a thing, and that, yeah, just one more week and he should be okay.
Cool. All right. Well, in that particular situation, if you've got cover, I assume the advice is then to keep Mark.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard not to, like, depending on how many trades and how important this week is again.
All right, maybe to turn it up a little notch, because that would be my position too. Jeff Lane, one of our patrons, has asked whether or not Hearn to Whitfield might be an option this week, and he's got 5 trades left, so he could entertain something like that.
Plenty of trades left. Mm. It's tricky. So I think my gut reaction to that is do it, just because we're so late in the season, you just getting premiums on. There's some uncertainty surrounding Hearn and how long he'll be out. Whitfield came back, looked great on the weekend. There's some doubt that I just heard the commentators at some point say that late in the game he was off with some sort of lower leg injury, but then he did come back on and still got a few more touches. So, and he's not on the injury list, Whitfield, but just picked up some sort of niggles that could potentially hold him back. Other than that, my gut reaction is yes.
Yeah, I think five trades is definitely heaps to have at this stage of the season. So if you can cover an injured player and bring in potentially, you know, a top two player in that position, that definitely seems reasonable. Just know that I guess it does come with some risk. Hearn has shown a high scoring potential so far this year. Whitfield has obviously missed games already this year. So, you know, a worst case scenario is Hearn comes back, scores well, Whitfield misses a week due to soreness. So just keep that in mind. I think you do have to make a calculation and ask yourself personally, are you happy to take that risk? But, you know, at face value, bringing in a bona fide like Whitfield seems like a pretty good option when your player's injured.
If you're rolling in trades like Jeff with five trades, you could just go Whitfield back to Hearn if you wanted to.
Well, last week we had talked about potentially trading in an extra bench premium instead of tinkering with your existing premiums on field. So would you potentially consider that with a glut of trades instead? So would you consider going down to three trades and bringing in, you know, let's say a 450K player to cover Hearn for the 1 week and then play with loopholes for the next few weeks?
I don't know. I think you've had maybe some luck with that in the past. My experience with that is that it hasn't really worked out for me and that I've always been better off just focusing on getting points on field.
I don't mind the trade, but it really depends on how many underperforming premiums you have. So if you've got a team full of Sicilies,
Andrews,
yeah, then you would definitely Cameron's, yeah, consider it.
Rockcliffe.
Yeah. People who also have more low side. Like, I think if you've got somebody who's always scoring 90s, then your ability to dodge the poor scores with loopholing is also a little bit lower. So it does depend on your team mix a little bit. I think it's a worthwhile alternate strategy to consider for Jeff in his situation. All right. Now to the next question, sort of related to the Hearn Whitfield question, but this one's from Nathan Cox from Facebook, and his spin to it is he could trade Hearn to Whitfield, but his alternative is to actually complete his final upgrades and upgrade Setterfield or Clark for that final midfield spot. He's got about 250K in bank, so he could do it in a single trade. Now, is that just bleedingly obvious to you, Mark? You definitely upgrade your final member versus trading in Whitfield, or where do you sit on that?
I've always got to be careful when something's bleedingly obvious. I think I need to just check myself, but because it does seem on the face value to be super obvious that you upgrade that rookie. I think Setterfield's probably pretty settled in that side now. So with his DPP, if you can make use of that, then I would probably keep him over Clark personally. Although Clark's pretty settled into the Bombers lineup as well. And with 550,000, Luke Parker's, Elliot Yeo's, Brad Crouch even, there's Tim Taranto, there's plenty of absolute guns you could pick up.
Yeah, I think I do have to add that Nathan did mention, like, if Hearn is out for multiple weeks, would you do that instead? And so I guess,
okay,
yeah, where we've started is Hearn won't be, and so this will be a lot less attractive. But, you know, even if Hearn is out for 2-3 weeks, like, if the equation is sticking with Setters Clark for the remainder of the season so that you can have Whitfield instead of Hearn, or hoping Hearn comes back, but in the meantime getting a midfield premium to lock that in, I think I would still choose lock in the midfield premium. And at least you have the chance that your other premium comes back.
And the trickiest part all is that I just don't think we're going to be getting reliable information that Hearn is out for 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah. I just don't think you're going to know that in advance.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, on to the next question then. This one's about sort of final upgrades, the next couple, so finishing your team. And this one's from Richard Lau on Facebook. He's got one final upgrade to make in his forward line. He's got four trades left, and he's considering whether or not to trade in a forward ruck at his F6 with Bynes to be able to provide swing cover. So Lysette or Hoff is who you might be looking at in that instance. Take a true F6, like potentially a Billings or Zeeble, or should he keep Setters at F6 instead and save trades? He's got Mabu or Chol as bench cover. And I just want to say, I'm surprised at how many people have Setterfield kicking around, because our next question is also about Setterfield. But he's got Setterfield too. Jeez, I feel like I'm missing out now. No, he's gone.
Okay. No, he was one of the ones I actually kept, just because I had so much faith in him and really thought that Bombers should have made a bit more effort to pick him up, to be honest. Four trades left. Or I think that, yeah, you should probably be upgrading in that spot. The Lysette versus Billings or Zeebel is a bit tricky. So Billings has had a really good month. Zeebel had a good month until the last little bit. Out of the two, I would have picked Zeebel for sure 2 weeks ago. Lysette looked amazing a couple of weeks ago, but then he's picked up some sort of injury, which is holding him back. Hoff had one really good game and then an okay game on the weekend. So the options to bring in are not like super, super convincing. And Gorn and Grundy look fit, and like they'll play out the rest of the year unless something happens. Like, I think, and if something happens, you'd almost just use a trade for that. So, yeah, really, really tricky spot. If there wasn't some injury concerns around Lysette, I think Lysette is the option. As a Billings owner, I'm pretty happy to have Billings, and he does have a very good record in the back half of seasons. So, potentially, it will actually keep going. What do you reckon, Matt?
Yeah, it's a pretty tough one. I think all the options, especially across a 5 week patch, are hard to split. I agree with what you're saying in that I don't think that I'd necessarily look for ruck forward cover at this stage. When I was looking at final upgrades with 11, 10 rounds to go or 8 rounds to go, whatever it was, there's more runway to say that I need potentially to have that cover. But I think you're right, Mark, with 5 weeks to go, I think you're more likely to just say you'll roll the dice in that instance. So I would just be looking at top scoring potential. And even looking there, you know, you get confused because they all have potential downside. So I think, like you said, Lysette with potential injury concerns. Hoff obviously has already burnt me before, so he can piss right off. Billings has high scoring potential, but he's also had troughs throughout the season, and also last year would have introduced some doubts into potentially return coaches. And Zeebel obviously has played well in the midfield, but then, you know, if he ever swings up forward or if North drop off a bit, like do you see him drop? It's a tough one. I think they're all good options. I just bring out the potential downsides because in terms of trying to identify risk, that's what you're trying to guard against. But it's gun to my head, I think I would pick Billings, but
wow, that's amazing. That makes me feel so good.
Well, I actually remember earlier on in the season me bringing Billings up as a trade-in target, and you were like, he's
I would have been pretty dismissive.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess because I had him last year, I don't have him this year, and he'd been doing okay. I've had a bit of FOMO on him throughout the season, so I don't know whether that's playing into it. But, yeah, Billings, he's actually looked good. Like, I've been reasonably happy watching from the sidelines, like assuming that I owned him, I'd be pretty happy, I think. So,
okay, just checking out the season averages, and Billings is what are we at? He's into the top 10 for forwards. That's pretty good as a starting pick at about 400,000. That's a pretty good result.
Doesn't quite beat my Dunkley pick in that slot, but yeah, not too bad, Mark. Not too bad.
Yeah, still, I guess Dunkley's not bad at this game.
All right. Well, the next question I think we've already covered, and it was from Smitty Tim, and it was, am I crazy to have thinking about Billings with a new coach? But I guess I did want to ask, did you think that would have any impact with the last few rounds? Did that make him any more or less attractive?
I think it does make him more attractive. The Saints, I think they scored, what, over 100 for the first time in like more than a season. So obviously something has changed. They're going to go be a little bit more attacking, and Billings will benefit from that. Looked really good on the weekend. Like I said, he does have a history of bringing home seasons reasonably strong, just enough to fool you into thinking he'll be a good pick the following season. At least I'm guessing he's played on the wing the entire season, barely up forward. So I think he will be available as a midfielder next season. So there will be no temptation. And yeah, I think that is a reason to bring him in a bit more confident in center field now with a new coach. I think that new coach does definitely change things. Like Zeebel, without Reece Shaw, I wouldn't pick Zeebel.
Absolutely. I think the coaches that are brought in to potentially audition for a role are incentivized to win rather than think a little bit more about the future and playing, you know, Mark Murphy out of position as Bolton did sort of week after week. So definitely a good call out by Tim and by yourself, Mark. All right, next question is from at Dave Nispel on Twitter. He had a few forward premiums that were not super high performing premiums that he was asking us about in terms of, you know, whether or not he should be looking to upgrade them as the season draws to a close. But his alternate strategy was, instead of upgrading one of those underperforming premiums, to bring in potentially Hawkins as an F7 instead. And I just wanted to float that past you, Mark, because he's just about bottomed out now.
Sure?
Geelong are going pretty awful, and so is Tomahawk. I'll read out his last five scores: 24, 71, 52, 53, 92. So I am completely aware of that. But before that, he was averaging 98 for the season. Last year, he averaged the same. And more importantly, his price point is absolutely cooked. 350K.
Crazy.
Peanuts. I mean, it cost 50K to upgrade him from Dylan Clark. Like, what do you reckon about Hawkins in as a potential loophole player for the last few rounds?
What happened to him on the bye, mate? He was doing all right before that.
It was.
I do know, like, a fair few coaches that brought him in a couple of weeks ago thinking that they got a huge discount at $430,000. They have not been happy. But I do think that 92 in a loss on the weekend is a good sign. And like you said, like, he has got a very, very good record previously and a very good record last season. We don't know that there's an injury, I don't think. I think it's more about the way Geelong's forward line is functioning, from what I can gather.
Yeah. Awful.
And so I expect Geelong to sort of remedy that a little bit. And they, as from what I remember, they had a pretty tasty draw on the run home. So, yeah, probably not
Sydney,
ridiculous.
Rio, North, Brisbane, Carlton. So only Brisbane as a top eight side remaining.
Yep, and Harris Angels will probably completely shut him down, and neither player will score any points. Yeah, as F7, I don't know, like, how many trades do you need to be doing that with the players you're likely to loop with, and the are you able to get Hawkins' score on field enough and have the first punt at Hawkins, because being the key forward, you'd like to get him on first rather than use him as a backup. Lots of questions I probably don't have the answer to though, mate.
Yeah, look, I agree. It's going to be horses for courses, but I think it's a decent flag that he's a pretty good value pick for the week. So if you are looking and starved for options, don't forget that you could potentially look at him as a trading option. Like, if, for example, you had 50K in bank and Dylan Clark, and you had, let's say, four trades remaining, you could do Clark to Hawkins in one trade and then use Hawkins as a, you know, swing player and then the backup premium for the remainder of the season. So it's not awful.
You've got plenty of trades, Marcus, and I know that you're collecting cats at the moment, so maybe you should give it a shot.
Maybe I'm just forecasting what I'm doing, mate. All right, let's move on to some rookies. Just want to cover these quickly, just in case you're thinking about trading in a rookie because you need to unlock some cash. We've got Jake Stein on the bubble. He scored 74 on debut and then got dropped. Came back in this week with a 34. Chances are he's not going to stay long in the team. But one of only two players on the bubble this week, interestingly enough, both for GWS. The other is a mid and a forward in Ian Hill, who we flagged last week. Scored 60 after 60 last week.
Pretty good.
117,300. He seems like the pick of the bunch for the week.
Yeah, and he brings something that other players don't necessarily have for the Giants, and so might get a few games.
A few more debutants on the weekend, just in case you're looking for a few more options. Dalton Langlands, mid-forward, 123,900, scored 66 on the weekend.
Decent.
Hayden McLean, forward for Sydney, 102,400. Scored 60. William Snelling, a highly touted mid-season draftee, midfielder, 117,300, scored 49. And that's pretty notable because he's broken into an Essendon side that's definitely in form at the moment. Interesting there.
Zero stats in the first quarter for Snelling. He did get a bit better as the game went on. He did seem a bit off the pace, though. And Bombers have a couple of injuries. So Clark will be back this week, probably for Haitley, and Laverde will be coming back in, potentially Fantasia as well. So a bit of competition for spots. I'm not totally convinced that Snelling would be first out, but he'd be among the first out.
And then there's also Francis Watson for West Coast defender, 124,000, scored 73. So I don't think any of these are must-haves by any stretch of the imagination, but if you're looking for downgrade targets, Yeah, you're better off picking somebody who is playing versus somebody who's not. So those are your options.
Yeah, all right, and he probably looks the pick of that bunch.
Yep. All right, so overrated, underrated now, and we've got a question here from The Revolution, one of our patrons, and he's asking about Sicily and specifically whether or not his role has changed a bit in his last few weeks. And we know he swung forward for a little bit, but even when he's playing back, it just doesn't seem to quite be the same lucrative role. Overrated, underrated, Mark, how do you see Sicily and how he's developed as a pick throughout the year?
Yeah, I was going to pick him to start with, and then Clarko talked about rotating him forward, and I was glad that I didn't pick him, but then he never played any minute forward before the bye. But now he's gone a bit up and down, so pretty happy I sort of didn't. He does seem to have played a different role in the last few weeks, but I think that he's an absolute star. I'm a massive Sicily fan, despite his brain snaps. And, yeah, he's probably not working out as a super coach pick at the moment, but super player.
I think he's definitely been overrated so far, and I've definitely overrated him. I think just the base assumption that when he had a few poor games here and there that he would be a good buy was maybe a false assumption predicated on his upside rather than the very real risk of Hawthorn moving him around or moving the magnets around, but definitely underrated in the sense that people assume that this will continue, and that's why, you know, it's hard to dismiss him as a trade-in option, because when he does score big, as he did 3 weeks ago, it's, you know, 141, you know, not just your traditional hundreds.
Yeah, I picked up Hurley at a similar time last year, and it really didn't work out because his role just completely changed, and it led to just consistently lower scoring. And it didn't mean that he was playing bad. He was still playing awesome and doing what the team needed. Just it wasn't converting to super coach scores, and Sicily could be in a bit of a similar situation.
Just to finish up on captaincy options, Mark, I've been doing a bit of research for this, but it feels like it's been getting me in trouble. So I did considerably less research on this. I only looked at Dangerfield and up. So really the guys who are very consistent and can punch out big scores, 116 plus. You're talking the McRaes, the Neils, Gorns, the Grundys, etc.
This is where I do get an advantage on you, because you're actually trying to do some research and try and be smart, whereas I just go Grundy and
Gorn.
Yeah, Grundy Gorn or Grundy McRae. It's pretty easy.
Well, this week, after last week's debacle, and also still doing a little bit of research, I've definitely narrowed my options down to just two, and VC Grundy into C Gorn. And that's not just because I've been burnt on the weekend, but also this week, there are no particular standout midfielders that you go, well, I maybe want to have a bit of a punt on him. So you've got Grundy, who plays Richmond. His last three against them, 135, 115, and 157 before this year. And this year when he played them, he scored 137. Gorn plays against St Kilda. He scored 127 and 145 prior to this year in his last two games against them. And earlier on when they faced off, he scored 126. So I think this week especially, no particular need to overthink it. Nobody else has particularly standout stats against any opposition.
Yeah, and Grundy's just on such a sick run that realistically I don't expect to need to even consider a captaincy option, to be honest. I think Marshall's in some pretty good form, and with Proust playing and Marshall in the team, I think that I'll be very tempted to go with Jack McRae this week instead of Gorn. I just think Lano Liver's back, which is potentially going to affect his center minutes, but McRae has been on a pretty sick run as well, and for quite a while hasn't scored below 116 for six or so weeks. So, yeah, I'll be very, very tempted to run with McRae.
May I pose just an alternate, just in case you're thinking of McRae instead of Gorn, and you actually pull that trigger? McRae hasn't scored particularly well against Freo in the past, and that doesn't mean that that will be the case moving forward, but 98, 108, and 95, his scores against Freo in the last 3 years. Whereas I think probably Lachie Neil was standing out as potentially a bit more of the pick of the bunch outside of Grundy Gorn. So he's got Hawthorn this week. Well,
can I make a counter argument to that? So McRae playing at Marvel this week, he's had one game under 100 at Marvel this entire season. His last few games, 120, 120, 116, 148, 150, 105, 135, 107, 97, 139, and 132. Pretty tasty Marvel record for Jackson McRae.
Still, Neil, has a pretty good record against Hawthorn historically. So okay. For non-McRae owners who are looking for a gone alternate, if you think that's a bit risky this week, Neil is also a decent option.
Yep.
All right, Mark, that wraps up this week's episode. Thank you very much for joining us again.
It's all right, mate. Hopefully I get a bit of good podcast karma and smash it up this week.
To our listeners, good luck, especially for those in leagues looking for an important last win heading into the final series. Wish you all the best. And with that, we'll catch you next week. See ya.
See ya. Yeah.